More Trouble with Women and a Song About It. Comes Jonesy with his upright bass. So he's, now he's got a three-headed instrument and an upright bass. Quite a man.
Well, welcome, Zep fans. Thank you for joining me. This is the Zep Fan Podcast, where we talk about all things Led Zeppelin. This is episode 13. This episode really means a lot to me. A very special guest, someone I've known for a very long time and has been a huge inspiration on my Led Zeppelin journey. I really enjoyed doing this interview with him. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed doing it. Before we begin, a few things. As you know, we are on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcast. Search Led Zeppelin. Search Zep Fan. You should find us. Please listen to previous episodes if you'd like. You could leave us a review if you'd like. I believe we're on Amazon as well and whatever other podcast networks are out there. But again, thank you everyone for listening to the show. I've really enjoyed doing this for you. I want to do a call out and try to get some people who have seen Led Zeppelin. I'm thinking about doing a podcast on people who saw Led Zeppelin. So if you have seen them, you have memories, you want to share your memories with other Zeppelin fans who I'm sure will totally enjoy that, please reach out to me at contact@zepfan.com. If you are a Led Zeppelin collector, please visit zepfan.com. There is over 6,000 items on the website, the largest Led Zeppelin memorabilia database on the internet. If you have anything that's not on there and you want to showcase it and be featured and be credited, reach out to me, contact@zepfan.com. Well, with all that out of the way, let's get on to episode 13. Today we are doing our first remote podcast. Our guest today wouldn't do a podcast unless we did it in person, so I couldn't resist a trip to the Bay Area to catch up with him. Sitting across from me today is Dave Taylor. If that name sounds familiar, it should. Dave produced the legendary Zoso magazine from January 1987 until summer of 1992. This monthly fanzine ran for 5 years and was the heart of keeping Zep fans together and sharing the spirit of Led Zeppelin during a time when Led Zeppelin was considered an afterthought. Dave is here to talk about his Led Zeppelin journey, being a Zep fan in the 70s, and where he has been since Zoso magazine. Dave, thank you for having me and thank you for doing the podcast. How are you?
I'm a yippy skippy, man.
I guess that's the only way to be, right?
A pleasure to be here with you. You might bring it up, but you were a good friend during that time too. So I appreciate you, and also Bob, who's not here.
But I asked him to come down. He's got a guest at his house visiting.
Yeah.
But I said,
it would
have been great to have him.
Yeah. He doesn't. No. You know, it's a political move, but that's cool. That's cool.
So yeah, I've definitely known you for a very long time. I met you during the heyday of Zoso magazine, so it's been really great. And you listened to one of the recent podcasts I did with James from Led Zeppelin News, and you reached out to me. So we haven't talked in about 30 years, so it was great catching up with you and stuff. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Dive into Zoso magazine a little bit. A monthly magazine for 5 years. I mean, dude, that's a huge commitment back then. This was a time before desktop publishing actually happened. I mean, how did you do it? Did you think it was going to be as big as it was? Did you think it was going to be as long as it? I mean, what in your mind back then? I mean, this is 1987. So Zeppelin wasn't happening. We had Live Aid, but it wasn't like Zeppelin's on the radio. They didn't have Zep sets back then. I mean, what drove you?
What drove me was just my, well, let me kind of back up. A lot of my early Zeppelin love and allegiance is sort of with time. I mean, I could tell you when I first heard Zeppelin and what sort of got me motivated and what kept me going, but particulars are kind of fading. But if anybody knows me, and the people that did know me always equated me with Led Zeppelin. So, for example, I could not see somebody like maybe even you, but somebody that's not involved in the Zeppelin world. And I didn't know they knew that I was in the Zeppelin world, per se. But they would, people would come out of my past, go, "Oh, Dave, yeah, I met you this and at the high school." And it was always you and Led Zeppelin. You know, I said, what everybody says. And that's kind of what drove me to Zoso, is that my life and Led Zeppelin were always on parallel tracks, for good or bad. And when I first heard Zeppelin, when I first heard, actually the song was Heartbreaker.
Nice.
And I heard that guitar that I thought was not even a guitar. Like I thought it maybe was a sparking wire from a power station down the street or something.
It's a heavy lick.
Yeah, that Zeppelin just became infused in my life. And so when I moved up to San Francisco from Los Angeles, and I was cutting hair actually. And I thought I could cut hair, but I couldn't.
I remember Bob got his free cut every time he came out. Every time we came up.
Oh, really? Free?
Yeah.
Get Bob in here. So let me add that up. Hold on. No, I shouldn't because I owe people a lot. We're on the other side. I'm so sorry. So when I moved up here, I was cutting hair and I wasn't doing too well. I couldn't fluff it. I couldn't style it. I could cut it, but my styling abilities weren't too great. So anyway, I looked at, I moved up by myself. I think you know, I moved up from LA to get away from my divorce at the time in LA. And kind of the thing that you always hear is like, well, you want to do something that you, kind of an outcrop of what you love in your life. Right. So I sat there in my lonely apartment. I didn't know anybody. Like I said, when I moved up here.
Market Street.
Yeah, Market Street. Yeah. I used to take walks during the weekend and just think about, gee, what do I knew this hair thing wasn't going to be a long-term career. And I thought, what do I want to do? And I thought about my loves of my life. And I got, well, I mean, number one was, if anybody, again, people that knew me and I just know myself, it was always Led Zeppelin. And in fact, the name Led Zeppelin doesn't even mean Led Zeppelin to me. I mean, Led Zeppelin to me means like my uncle or my cousin.
Someone that's close to you.
Yeah, I can't even equate Led Zeppelin with like a band. And Led Zeppelin was
of life.
The cells in my body. I mean, that's how close I was to that band. I felt, I mean,
right.
Obviously as close as a fan, thousands of miles and never meeting them. Not part of their family or part of their crew and all that stuff. So so that's how it came about. I said, what do I want to do? I know this thing's not going to work out. What do I want to do? And I thought about, well, I want to do something with Led Zeppelin. And what am I going to do? I've always liked writing. Actually, when you mentioned desktop publishing, that was slowly emerging. It wasn't to any... sort of pinnacle at the time, but there were devices that were allowing you to do that. For example, I mean, you could scan a photo, but you'd have to put a scanner inside a dot matrix printer that would go back and forth on the, instead of the printer tape, you'd put in the camera, it would scan the document like it was printing it. And then it would transfer all the pixels to the computer. So anyway, I said, well, I'm gonna mess around with a Led Zeppelin publication, see what I can do. And so I just put together some pages and I wrote some stuff and I did whatever graphics I could do at the time as a sort of pen and quill that they were. Right. And I just photocopied them. The pages, and I think I've told you this story. I've told people stories, sort of my nirvana moment of knowing Zosa was going to be more than just my own thing for a little bit, was in the high rise that I lived in, the mail room was right, as you walked into the elevator lobby, the mail room was right at the end, and you could see into the mail room and the backlit mail boxes,
right.
You could
and little mine, window on there, yeah.
And mine
yeah.
was in the very front where you could see, like if I had mail, it would get sort of dark and you could see it because of the backlit nature of the sun coming in and from the back. And I remember six pages, eight pages, something like that, photocopied them, stapled them. I had 20 sets of those things. They did a rudimentary sort of cover. And but I always take pride in whatever I do. So right. I try to, you know, issue one, number one. I thought, you know, I had hopes that maybe there'd be an issue number two, and organize it in a certain thing, personal, that I thought, yeah.
There you go. I'm showing an image of the very first Zoso magazine.
Look at that still.
That
turns me on, man.
Right, like, yeah. You could tell it's all
the
Dot Matrix
plant,
and all that.
Yeah, plant, yeah. You know, running up to the mic. Yeah, that's...
what was a big deal picking out that front picture, right?
Yeah, it always was a big deal, always. And Zoso, the front of it changed a lot.
Right.
And that was, yeah, that was, look at that, that logo. That was all just like string thing going back and forth. Anyway, whatever. Yeah, wow. So I'm going to cry.
It's good times back then, right?
Yeah, that was. Good. It was, I think. But anyway. Well, sure it was. Yeah, it was.
So
yeah.
Going to the mailbox, and I think, and that's been pretty awesome because there's a ton of mail in there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
How did you distribute them with these 20? You mentioned you had 20 Zosos. I mean, how did you distribute it? How did you get the word out?
Well, the way my brain works, even at that time, looking at that, even though it looks good, to me it looks good.
Good times.
But it was just kind of a, you know, very rudimentary design and everything, and kind of quickly done, but I think it looks cool. But anyway, I always want to do everything top notch. So even with that, I go, how are people going to know about it? So I was looking at Rolling Stone, and they had these ads in Rolling Stone.
Yeah, that's right.
And I go, well, gee, you know, how much is that going to be? And it came out to something like $300 for a little, you know, little blurb, which of course at the time,
it's a lot of money,
and, you know, and for, you know, some, you know, dope like me, it's like, wow. But I, you know, I just go, I took out my credit card and, you know, that's how I want to, you know, make an impact as much as I can. So, I know I'm backtracking, but I walk in the elevator lobby and it's black. You know, my mailbox is black. I can't even see any pinpoints of light in it. And I go, you know, you get that thing in the back of your neck and you go, oh my God. There's people. I think either it's the tax, you know, the tax people or subscribers. And I opened it up, and of course, it was a whole bunch of subscribers.
Right.
And I go, oh, now I've got to do something now.
Now again, there's an issue
I bought some manila envelopes and started stuffing them, and of course then I had to get more, and I had to print out some more, and then I had to obviously the second issue, and it just started.
What did you charge for the very first issue? I don't see a price on there.
I think $2, I think it was. Right. I think.
There's issue two right there.
Yeah, look at that. God.
February 1997.
Jeez.
The object.
Does it say any price
it
on
it? It
doesn't
have a price yet. So I think you're going back and forth.
I think it was $2. Yeah. Yep. I think it went up to four. I think it went again. See, I don't keep sort of tabs on it or anything. Well, but I think it started at two, and it was $20 for a year or something like that.
Yeah, printing wasn't cheap back then either. I mean, it's still not that cheap.
But that wasn't printing. Yeah. That was just photocopies.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, because you could see the staples in them.
Yeah, and I would just staple it, and it was just like a haphazard. You know, just fly by the seat of your pants. But again, it was a lot of passion, a lot of, you know, that was, and again, going back into my life, I mean, to show, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listening did the same thing, but I mean, you know, the hours, I would, maybe if you put together the years I spent listening to bootlegs,
right?
You know, how many people besides me, where you almost want to cry, where you spent so much time putting on bootleg after bootleg after bootleg.
Because you had enough of the albums and you want more.
Yeah, just going through listening to concerts after concerts and going, oh, is that a new song?
Right.
You know, oh, they didn't do that. They didn't do that in Toronto. They didn't do that in
When I think live
San Diego.
Led Zeppelin's a different texture than the albums. Albums are so well produced, and then you get just four people on stage, mm-hmm. and it's just a totally different sound, but with that energy.
Yeah.
So it's just completely different.
And creativity, where they would just riff and, you know, like just, and again, I don't know. I don't think I ever heard anything that became a song, but you would hear these riffs that Page would do and you'd go, why isn't that not a song?
Right.
You know,
night before.
Yeah. It would sort of like go off in your head. You could see a song being created out of it, and it would, nothing would ever happen. But that's how much, sort of a grab bag he had that he would just go off and something would happen.
Right.
But it never was used.
Yeah. Speaking of back then, and when you started it in January 97, was there any other fanzines back then? Because I know Dave Lewis did one in the 80s and there was Feather in the Wind in the 80s, early 80s, but I don't think when you started.
I think I had heard about Tight But Loose.
Right. I don't think he was doing it back then at that time.
Really?
I think he did it in the, like right around 1980, but I think that kind of stopped and maybe started later.
See how screwed up I am?
Well, dude, no, we're talking 30 years, 40 years from now. So, yeah.
No, in my case, it's 10 years. Well, I mean, that's the only one I sort of, I mean, I know, you know, and then when I did it, you know, I knew there was a couple others that came out. Some guy named Mark Buffall, I think, did one.
Well, those all came later. Like, in Electric Magic came later. Proximity came later. Proximity was another one he did in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And then they stopped and they started later. But I think, because seeing your magazine out there, I mean, so I want to tell this quick story because you're talking about being on Market Street and having your high rise. And that's it. I'm going to tell the story on how we met. You probably remember it. We shared this last time we spoke. But
oh, yeah. Like a tack.
Yeah. And it would never happen nowadays. Myself and Bob were at Tower Records. We saw your fanzine, must have been 87. Yeah. We're like, dude.
Yeah, that was the other. Is not only that I advertised through Rolling Stone, was that I immediately, when things started rolling, I got a distributor to Tower Records. I got into there.
And they had a wonderful magazine section.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Anyways.
I remember because Bob and I saw it. Like, fuck, it's a Led Zeppelin magazine.
Oh, you
check
can swear
this out.
Now?
Yeah, we can. It's open. Okay. This is an FM. We're good. So it's like, oh my gosh, check this out. It's a Led Zeppelin magazine. You know, because that's what you do. Just hung out in Tower Records for hours looking for whatever you can in a Zeppelin. And then... oh, he's from San Francisco. Let's drive up there tomorrow. Where's Market Street? This is before navigation. So we had to pull out the map and figure out where it's at. We parked right across the street. I remember we rang your buzzer. Do you remember what number it was at the house? I don't remember.
Number of my apartment?
Yeah, because it was
I think it was 2623.
Yeah, it was on your the Zoso.
Yeah, I think it was 20. Yeah,
I remember buzzing it and you answered it. Hey, we're Led Zeppelin fans. We saw your magazine. And you were nice enough to let us in, which I don't think nowadays you do that if someone buzzed your door and said, hey, I'm a Zeppelin fan. You're like, get the hell out of here.
Well, it depends on, you know.
There's a lot of reasons.
You know, never mind. So,
but I think
by the way, I was just a fan. So it was like, I mean, it wasn't any big business plans on my part. It was just I was doing this thing. I was a big Zeppelin fan. If you were a Zeppelin fan, you were my brother.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was, you know, hey, come on up.
And I'm sure we weren't the only ones. I mean, did you have
you
other
were
people?
The only ones, man. No, I mean I met other people
that
through
come
Zoso.
To the,
I
come
mean
to your place?
You know, remember the convention?
Yeah.
I met people through there and there was I met people, but as far as people coming to my place and ringing the doorbell, I think you were the only guys.
Right. So it's been a great relationship.
I hate to say that because you know it reinforces how my cloister up there. But I think you were the only guys that did that.
You mentioned Zeppelin being a big part of your life, and that everybody who knew you knew about you and Led Zeppelin. So I'm assuming that was during high school and all that. What was it like being a Led Zeppelin fan in high school? Was Zeppelin the it band? Was Rolling Stones it band?
Yeah,
were you an outcast?
Well, that was a thing. I think if anybody was there at the time, ooh, I moved the mic, sorry. was that Zeppelin was sort of the outlier. I mean, and I guess it even applied to today, the in band or the one that was approved by Rolling Stone and by the... corporate media was the bands like the Rolling Stones and some others, and they of course they were involved a lot more into the cultural things, what's the guy who did the portraits of the soup cans?
Andy Warhol.
Yeah, Andy Warhol. Yeah. You know, they have parties, and Mick Jagger would be there, and some other people, and they were all involved in that zeitgeist,
right?
And Zeppelin wasn't.
Right. They were the outcast.
And I think because their music also was a little bit more primal and wasn't kowtowing to, and they were, you know, the singles, obviously you always hear about, well, we didn't do singles.
Right.
and all this other thing. So corporate wise and culturally, I think Zeppelin was, and I'm not going to bring up, get it too much politically, but I think, you know, some people can equate even politically, even in a political situation in the last few years, there's the approved things, and then there's one of the populist things. And I think Zeppelin was the populist band, where if you talk to 100 teenagers and they were buying tickets, they would, you know, overwhelmingly they'd be buying Zeppelin tickets.
Yeah.
And but the media was all hyped up about the Stones, and I always keep harping on, the Stones is a great band.
Right.
But
right.
Beatles, you know, Beatles, Stones, that kind of thing. And so it was hard, you know, because you were always on the outside. But what could you do?
Right.
I mean, you knew they were incredible.
So was Led Zeppelin 2 your first album that you heard? Because you mentioned Heartbreaker.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That's what
album you bought?
Because I think about, the first concert I went to.
Yeah.
And I think about the first album memory can play tricks on you, on anybody.
Yeah.
So the first song that I remember hearing and saying, who is that, or is that, you know, knowing that's Led Zeppelin, was Heartbreaker.
Right.
So I must have, for all intents and purposes, the first music I really heard and got into was with Led Zeppelin too. So there was I wasn't a debut fan, I guess you could say, whatever that means. But Heartbreaker, I already mentioned it, but when I heard Heartbreaker, I just, something I'd never heard before.
It was wicked.
I never heard it.
I mean, it just like,
it was
like,
it was, and I hate to put it this way, but it was like hardcore pornography. Yeah. And I don't say that with any, you know, flippancy.
Right.
I mean, it was so dirty and down and dirty. And like I said, that didn't even sound to me like a guitar. When I heard it, it sounded like the electricity, something snapped and there was some live wires and they were arcing.
They just went together so good.
Or like a Frankenstein movie where they have the electrodes and the things going. It was like, what is that? And then, you know, that sort of the shudder. Sometimes you'd hear at the end some shudder, like a, you know, anyway. And of course, Plant's voice was, you know, all that. So it was like phenomenally different from anything I'd heard and primal than anything I had heard. So after Heartbreaker, that was it.
What album do you remember hearing, this album's coming out, and just looking forward to it? That was Zeppelin 3. So 69, you got Zepp 2.
Yeah.
What was it like hearing Zeppelin 3? I mean, obviously that's a different album, and that was a big deal back then.
Well, everything was cool. Yeah. Because even to this day, Led Zeppelin is not about metal.
Right.
To me. Led Zeppelin is about creativity and about, within that creativity, making it as bold and as majestic as you can.
Right.
So you can do that with acoustic. You can do that with anything. You can do that with hip hop. And of course, majority of hip hop or majority of acoustic is going to be bullshit and mediocre and tiresome. But if people understand what Zeppelin was about, even the acoustic is going to be like that.
Right.
It's going to be like Heartbreaker. Zeppelin, you know, it's just balls to the wall. Of course, not only even Zeppelin at times didn't, you know, there's sort of anybody, you're not going to always maintain that. So yeah, when I heard Led Zeppelin 3, and it was so interesting, you know, if you really think about the time then and the times then with no internet, no social media, but everything done through your record store and your radio station,
your DJ.
Was that, you know, it was just incredible to know, well, like 6 months out, like in LA, Jim Ladd, KLOS, or KMET, KNAC, which are down in Long Beach, all these rock stations, they would like, you know, we just heard, we got over the wire, or wire, I don't know, whatever that means. We got over the transom, we got word from Atlantic Records that the new Zeppelin album will be out in 6 months. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, it's been 2 years and, you know, you think of these, you know, wizards out in the hills of England and they're doing their potions. And no, because that's what,
that's
you
all
know,
you
to
knew
me,
of.
They were like magicians because they, you know, the way that what they put out was so incredible. So then, you know, Zepp 3 came out. And so I love second side where That's the Way.
Right.
And I can't remember That's the Way. Tangerine and what was the other one? There was another
Hats
one.
Hats off to Roy Harper.
Yeah, but I mean, there was another acoustic that was on the side too.
Friends.
Yeah,
Friends was on the one, though, but yeah.
It was beautiful. It was just beautiful because it was all done.
Broadway Arstom.
It was all done, balls to the wall and done with every last drop of creativity used. So I loved it. And of course, the artwork. You know, the album artwork, everything.
With the spinning wheel. Yeah, because that's what you do. You just sit there and listen to it, then you play with the album. Read every nook and cranny of that album.
Note,
look at every
minor note and every little thing. And I'll tell you, I have specific memory of two things. I have specific memory of listening, because they'd have listening parties. You know, they go, okay, right. It's going to be, they go.
Oh, on the radio.
They go, okay, the whole 6 months. And they'd go into your, Chris, what's his name? The director, Chris Columbus, I think his name. No, it's Cameron Crowe.
Yep.
He did some writing about Zeppelin. Yep. His latest film, Licorice Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, I don't know if any of that was the record name of a record chain in L.A., Licorice Pizza Records.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't think they ever referenced it in the movie, but I used to go to Licorice Pizza on Wilshire Boulevard, and they would have a little chalkboard. And that's part of the thing. You'd walk in, and one day they would just be, Led Zeppelin, proposed date, March 1972 or whatever. And then you'd hear it on the radio. But I remember specifically Physical Graffiti and also In Through the Outdoor, where they would have, Tuesday, Monday at, or whatever, Tuesday or Monday at 10 a.m., we're gonna debut, Physical Graffiti. And I remember maybe because it's the latest one, but In Through the Outdoor.
Yeah.
I was in my parents' house. I had all the stereos, I had all the transistor radios, and hearing in the evening come on, that.
Because you never know what it's going to be. When you hear that, what's going to happen? This,
And it's like, oh my. And you're almost like, having an orgasm, literally. And you're almost, urinating and everything else, and you're just like, and then here it is, the new Led Zeppelin. You hear this, and in the air.
Yeah. What was your thought of that album overall? I mean,
it was weak. It was weaker than the others.
Right. Right.
There were songs I liked, but
you had to wait a lot longer for Zeppelin album 1, 2, 3, 4 Houses. Yeah. It all can't seem to come year after year. Then all of a sudden we started having to wait for Physical, then Presence, and In Through the Outdoor,
Into the Outdoor, I wasn't impressed as the others. What can you say? I mean, no human being is perfect. No band is perfect. You thank God they were even still around, and there were songs on there that were great.
Right,
Call My Love.
And each album has texture, different texture. Yeah. So that was just another Led Zeppelin texture. Yeah. Where do you think Zeppelin would have gone? What do you think the next steps? Would you think the 1981 tour would have been successful in a sense?
Do you think they would have made it?
What
exemplified Zeppelin's possible direction in the 80s was seeing John Paul Jones in 1980 with his mutton chop sideburns, and he looked like he was ready for the next phase.
Right.
I don't know if anybody picked up on that. But when I saw John Paul Jones in the 1980 tour, I go, they all know what's got to be done, and they're all going to be going. And of course, the fact of knowing that the Chicago Tribune was having tickets and all the crowds that were waiting for the vans to come by for the tour that never happened, I don't think there would be any. Now, of course, you look at Coda. And that would have contained some of the songs, I guess, of the... Now, Coda... Now, see, I don't... To me, that was underproduced musically. And it could have been... There were some great songs on there.
Right.
And whether they just were slapdash because...
Well, that Wearing and Tearing should have been on In Through the Outdoor, 100%. Yeah. I think that would have been pretty amazing.
But I'm saying that the production value of all those songs were lackluster to me. And who knows if some some real effort was put toward? Who knows? I don't want to say there was any effort, but I'm saying that going forward, if you look at Coda as a sort of a signpost, I don't think it would have any problem.
Right.
I don't think it would have any problem.
Well, there was an interesting thing on YouTube that I think it was an engineer came forward and he was talking about that album. He was asked to help out on that album. He was originally was at Soul Studio, would work there before Page bought it. He stayed over after Page got it, and he said he helped on that album. And his words were somewhat that Page wasn't really, he was pretty much agreed with everything in the sense he wasn't really much there.
Right.
So it's, you know, he would, this guy would produce it or do, not produce it, but, you know, put the engineering effects on it. And what do you think of that? Oh yeah, fine. So Page didn't seem to have a lot of input on that.
And
so
that's another
that doesn't have the Zeppelin
subject
sound.
That I feel, you know, it's gotta be put in the mix is that Page became broken.
Yeah.
Right. And I almost want to cry because, I mean, it affected me.
Right.
But if it was going to affect anybody, it was going to affect Jimmy Page.
Right.
And you could tell, you know, his whole body changed.
Right.
And he couldn't really play guitar anymore. And if you look at him in Arms,
it just didn't look like him.
And you could understand it,
right?
Because if I was affected, to know that
you all right? Take a breath.
There would be no more Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You know, for the guy who created it,
right?
And was and you can talk about everybody else and John Paul Jones maybe taking a bigger role later, but Led Zeppelin was Jimmy Page,
right?
And for all intents and purposes. Not that everybody else, but he, you know, that was
his band. Yeah.
Most of his creativity was directed out of that. Because if you look at, because we don't know about Bonham, but if you look at anybody's projects post Zeppelin, nothing compares. In any capacity.
Right.
So I could keep talking. You know, I mean, the only thing for me was that Page Print, Truth.
The Unleaded project?
Yeah, yeah. And
yeah, they did Truth that, Explodes?
Yeah, Truth Explodes. Yeah. That was a Zeppelin tune.
Right.
And I mean, as raw as it was, that was a Zeppelin tune. But anyway.
So where were
anyway,
you?
Anyway, so that my point being is that I don't know what my point is. I just wanted to weep.
Yeah.
Wanted to do a live weep into the microphone. And
well, where were you when you heard about Bonham passing?
I was.
It's like the day JFK got shot.
Laugh.
Everyone's gonna know.
I was actually with my ex-wife, and we were driving intrastate from I think it was from the San Luis Obispo area to LA, and we stopped off at a I think maybe I'd heard it on the radio, and I stopped off at a liquor store and got the paper.
You didn't hear it on the radio?
Well, must have been a reason for me to pick up the paper.
Oh,
see my memory. I don't, you
right.
know, but I don't, I wouldn't just stop the car.
Let's get
dude,
a paper,
I gotta,
honey.
I gotta get the Oxnard Times, man. Yeah. Something's in there. I read it there, you know, that he had died, and that's how I really found out. Cause something, I don't know, I wasn't really convinced or something, but when I saw it in the paper in Oxnard, it was actually in Oxnard. There is a town named Oxnard. I didn't just upchuck or something. There's a town called Oxnard, and I stopped, got a paper, and I saw it in there, and it was just, you know, it was like,
did you think
your whole world stops?
Did you think they were going to continue? Did you, because, you know, of course, other bands get other drummers.
Yeah, I thought they would.
Yeah.
I thought they would. Yeah. And, but I was totally expected that they didn't.
100%.
And, but then that's a whole other subject.
Yeah, I know. We'll hit that in a minute. I know how your feelings towards that.
And anybody that reads those so knows that,
Well, okay, so you talked about growing up in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned seeing them. How many times have you seen the band?
I saw them. I know I saw them twice in 77. I know I saw them once in 75. I know I saw them once in 73. I know I saw them in 72. Now, that's where... I thought I saw them in 70.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a Blueberry Hill concert, right? Mm-hmm. And I have a specific memory of going to a concert and seeing bootlegs at the LA Forum. I always went to LA Forum and seeing bootlegs on the ground and buying one called Live at Blueberry Hill.
Right.
And that was my first bootleg. And so I couldn't have, they couldn't have recorded the concert in the future and brought it back, right? So my first concert was either, was there 71? Was there, is there?
Yeah.
So it was either, it was either 71 or 72.
Yeah.
Because I don't think if I was 70, I would have been, I could have been.
Yeah.
Because I was a real small, I was a kid, man. I was, right. And I went to the Mutual Ticket Agency. And I went, I think by myself, I just wanted to go see Led Zeppelin because I was enthralled with them. But then again, if Zeppelin, I don't know, so I heard Heartbreaker. What time did Zeppelin 2 came out?
69.
I know I saw them for sure in 72. I know, I I saw them in 72. And I think I saw them once before, maybe twice before. But my first big thing of the concert was buying that bootleg and I bought Live at Blueberry Hill.
Very cool.
So, I'm sorry for my...
If anyone asks me any concerts that I've seen in the last 40 years, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Robert Plant shows and Paige Plant shows because, you know, they have special memories, but uh-huh. I still don't know exact dates. And
right.
So, seeing Led Zeppelin live, I mean, what do you remember? I know it's a long time ago, but I mean, was it loud?
It was very loud. It was very loud. In fact, I remember... I forgot the guy's name. I don't think it was Jim Ladd. He was on KNAC, the Long Beach rock station. I forget his name. But he was sort of one of these guys that was, you know, he wasn't too thrilled about Zeppelin. And he went to their 75 show, and his ears got blown out because they were so loud. Because 75 was the no acoustic set.
Right, right.
It was just all, you know, it was all power.
And they had, I think they had Shoko back then, so they were pretty serious about their production.
That's kind of just a sidelight. But, they were always loud. But the thing that got me, especially the first time, was seeing Plant, not Page or anything, but the light, what do you call them? Searchlights or the spotlights coming on, and seeing his hair coming up from the stairs from the backstage, and seeing this mane of hair bounce, blonde mane bouncing. Really, I mean,
right?
That's a lot of hair, and then him singing.
Yeah,
that I mean, it's like they even talk about it. He probably wouldn't even need any amplifiers,
right?
But his amplifiers. It was just like it just seared into every crack of that building and every, you know, your every crevice of your body and your ear canal. It just you know, when Plant sang, that was the first thing.
And seeing the hair, I could imagine.
Oh my God. Because
that's, you know, we don't have YouTube back then. Everything was pictures in magazines, and that's about it. And it's just finally seeing it live like that must have been mind blowing.
Of course, later on, as I got more, I watched Page a lot.
Right.
And, but the first thing was in the concert was the loud, and it was seeing Plant.
Cool.
And his voice.
Yeah. And I'm a big Plant fan. I could go for that. That's cool. Do you have any recollection of the acoustic set?
I do. I mean, I remember that. I thought it was so cool.
Yeah.
You know, what else? That this band, because I don't know if anybody else did it. I mean, I'd never been to a Stones concert.
Right.
You know, Pink Floyd, I guess, maybe did it. Maybe I never even went to Pink Floyd. I mean, I was just Zeppelin. I never did anything. But I saw Rush a few times.
Yeah,
and I can't even think. But I just kind of saw Zepp. But yeah, I don't think many bands are doing it. So when they did it, it was so personal.
Yeah,
and just sitting there, and I mean, just little folding chairs they got from. They weren't even chairs from that were made for like Taylor Swift, probably for $10 million.
Yeah.
They were just chairs from the.
The back.
You know, the bathroom in the back or something, and they just unfolded them, and they just played. And it was just so personal and cool. And I love acoustical music.
Right.
I love quiet music as much as I do hard music, if it's done right. And it was just endearing.
And seeing
so
Jimmy
it made me love them even more.
Well, what was it, seeing Jimmy in the dragon suit? Was there pictures?
Yeah.
Did you see pictures up to that point, seeing, you know, some of the images of what they might look like?
You mean when he got to the dragon suit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember actually in 75 seeing in People magazine shots from their tour before I even saw him in Page in that dragon suit.
Yeah, the black one, yeah.
Yeah, and I just like, wow, you know, that just, again, that's just Zeppelin. I mean, it's just like, it's like the magicians are magicianing. you know, they're doing their thing. Of course, I remember in the earlier concert, like if, you know, I look at some of the posters I used to get in '72, where he was basically not in that, and he was in
kind of average,
you know, t-shirt kind of thing, and real laid back, and planning like a tank top and things, and so. But yeah, the dragon suit was all, it was all cool because he was the he was like a small G god, you
right?
Know? So he could wear that and get away with it.
So is it true that like a lot of the...
And I like the black one as opposed to the white one.
Right. You know? But was that a lot of the speculation back then? Like Jimmy's into black magic and stuff like that? That wasn't a lot of talk back then?
Oh, that? Yeah. Yeah. No, not... I mean, I heard a lot of the sort of Christian view of it.
Yeah.
You know, of it, you know, satanic and I just thought it was so silly because, you know, who does listen to records backwards?
Right.
And then with all the other stuff that's out there, why does anybody who was satanic when, I mean, porn was just being flooded back in the 70s and drugs and, you know, whatever, riots. And it was just, you know, it was a turbulent time. Why does, you know, Satan going to worry about, I mean, if there is and all that, if he's going to worry about putting a little.
Right.
So if you do hear it, it's like, you know, Zed Zayn. You know, I like, what? It doesn't make any, you know, sentience. It doesn't make any sense to, you're going to get legions of people because if you play it backwards, you're going to hear Zed Zayn. You know, so whatever, you know, or, you know, sounds like a burp or something.
Right, right.
So I just thought it was silly, but it was something that became part of the lore. And, you know, just like I knew Paige, you know, had that occult bookstore, Equinox, you know, and Aleister Crowley. And none of that ever bothered me because I understood people seeking. And if I could put that in the context of as a seeker, then it was cool. Now, if I saw that, if anybody lording it over me and trying to convince me of something, like hit me over the head. Now, like for example, in Zep 4, you see the tarot card, the hermit.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you're not hitting me over the head. You're not saying, you know, this is, you know, like they do now.
Right.
Do something in the concert or say things or, you know, it was all just very part of the art. And if it's part of seeking, we all do sort of whatever we look at things that maybe are questionable. So I never let it detour me from my, I thought about it and I researched it.
Right.
I thought it was silly. And if you really wanted to talk to somebody about it, you could pretty much debunk it pretty quickly.
Right.
So I never gave it much credence and I just went on and
So let's go back to your time at Zosa Magazine.
Uh-huh.
During this time, you've obviously met a lot of great people, myself included.
Two great people.
Yeah, two people. And Bob, who's
Bob
not here.
And Mark. No, I think it was Mark and Bob.
Yeah. And you've also met some people in the Zeppelin circle, for example. And I know you wrote about it and shared it in Zosa Magazine, that you met Richard Cole. And you also met Neil Preston, which is a photographer. So talk a little bit about that experience, what that was like getting a contact from Richard Cole. Did you know who Richard Cole was before contacting?
Yeah, I knew who he was.
Yeah, so what was that experience like?
You know, I'm just like Neil Preston. Cool dudes. I would say Neil Preston was a little bit more personable.
He provided some great shots, too,
cover. And because he was more involved with the magazine, I sort of, you know, appreciated him more. And we actually kept in contact. And he gave me photos to use exclusively for Zoso. Richard Cole, I never met him.
Right, okay.
It was all on phone.
Okay.
I never met him, so I want to be straight about that. But he was, you know, he was accommodating and everything, but it was just... it was just on the phone. It was sort of cursory. You know, he had his time. He had his things to do and did what we had to do, and that was it.
Did he reach out to you? I mean, what was the purpose of the call?
Yeah. He reached out to me because I was doing some articles about, you know, what he was doing. I think it was was that book, Hammer of the Gods?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he was involved with that. And so he wanted to get his 2 cents in. But Neil Preston was the one. I met him a number of times. He was always very cool, and he helped the magazine out. And in fact, we were going to do, at the end, we were, you know, talking about doing some little projects, things that to go beyond Zoso.
Right.
But it never happened. And mostly because of me, because I go through the different things of being engaged and not engaged. Right. And at that time, things were getting sort of weird with Zoso. And
of course, you met a lot of great people, but I know also you were contacted by Jimmy Page's lawyer at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that experience like? And that did that deflate you at all?
No,
it
didn't
deflate
me. I could see the reasoning. Cause I was at the time I was in my classifieds and Zoso, people were selling tapes or trading tapes or whatever, live tapes. The address the address in San Francisco where I lived is a high rise in a financial district,
right?
Sort of on the edge of a financial district, or it was because I don't live.
It looks like it looks like a office versus
right.
That's what Bob and I thought.
Right. So the first floor is retail.
Yeah.
I think the second floor might be retail. Then there's business offices up to floor 13, and then 14 to 26 were apartments.
Right.
Just not knowing, just walking by it, and you know, if somehow they got wind of Zoso, and these guys, and how corporate are they? How big are they? Ooh, Market Street. Of course, you couldn't do a Google Earth, I guess, at the time. But if they sent somebody locally
in San Francisco,
they're in this big high rise, and the ground floor, I think they had a Wells Fargo bank, you could sort of put two and two together.
Yeah,
and that maybe this guy is a big deal.
Yeah.
So I was contacted. I'm trying to again see memory. I'm trying to think whether it was by phone or mail or what. But anyway, I was contacted. I forgot his name. Jeez, I forgot his name. I remember I can see him in my head, but I forgot his name.
Yeah.
And we met. He said Jimmy Page is aware of your and Robert Plant are aware of your magazine. They like it. But they don't like, especially Page doesn't like the bootlegs.
Yeah, selling the bootlegs.
Or trading the bootlegs, which again, I can go on for another hour about why, you know.
We'll do part two.
Yeah, why anybody would care about bootlegs? Because the only nuts like me and you.
It's kind of what kept the band alive for a long time.
I mean, they would ever get in. I would tell people, I said, do you think if Macy's had the bootleg for sale and the window, and would be playing it, you know, 10 people maybe would buy it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so anyway, he quickly realized that I was not,
big corporation.
I invited him up to my apartment and he saw the stacks.
It wasn't Zoso Corporation.
It was stacks of magazines on the floor and my stacks of
envelopes,
cause I actually sold licensed T-shirts to Winterland because I wanted to be as legal as possible, and so I had posters and T-shirts on the floor, and it was just like a big college frat room with all this Zeppelin stuff everywhere. And he quickly realized I was just a fan.
Yeah.
So we talked for a few minutes. And he realized a fan, and he left. Let me get the fuck out of here because this guy's just a dopey fan. Anyway, so he wanted an issue every month. And I said, and I told him, I said, I looked at him right in his face, and I said, whatever Page wants, Page gets.
Yeah.
So I'm going to,
quote
unquote, take him out of the magazine, and then won't be in there anymore.
Yeah.
And I did, in a way.
Yeah. Supplements.
So, and just like with any regulation and people try to stifle things, you figure a way to get around it. So anyway, the few people that wanted, the few Zeppelin nerds that wanted to do it were still able to do it, but it was done in another way.
Very good.
So, and then I kept sending him, and I wanted to meet him, and I never met any of them. I was just a cog in the fandom, and maybe presented, if I had some sort of slick office maybe, and I was... they might have taken some more notice, but they realized quickly that I was just a
fan.
Just a fan, and that was that. It was see you later, and I never really heard from him again.
So, I want to go back a little bit. You were talking about seeing him in 75, and one of the things that you did is you filmed him in 75 with your 8mm.
Yeah.
And Eric Levy, this is for you.
Yeah, I filmed him.
So, yeah. So talk about that experience. And I remember you telling me, because I'm a Led Zeppelin video fan myself, and I remember you telling me the story.
Yeah, but you're a real Zeppelin
video. Yeah, you're telling me
the
story.
Is your channel? Your license plate is Zepp fan. Or your... Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So I remember one of the stories you were telling me about, it was and I don't want to ruin the conversation, but you did say it was for a school project. But so talk to me about what drove you to do that, and was there any extra footage that you could possibly cut out of it?
No. Everything, I never cut any of that.
Okay.
Because there wasn't much to, there's not much good stuff in there. There's a lot of it's jumpy. There's a lot of dark things.
That's
and
good stuff
that was
to
far
have.
Away.
It was inside.
I was up on the side, and there's some good shots of them from up the side. But
also captured the name and lights, which is a big deal.
Yeah. That was So, but that was it. I mean, no big deal. I was there. I was and I had a 8mm camera, and I took some footage and.
Right.
Little minor glimpse.
And do you still have that footage? I'm just curious.
I don't know, man. I thought I gave it to you. No, honestly, I don't know. I thought I gave it to you. I don't know. No. If I do, I don't know where it is, to tell you. Just like I don't know where half
my shoes are.
I know I have Zoso t-shirts. I found one. I don't know. The rest are in some boxes somewhere.
Did you watch the that convention footage I put on YouTube from when we went there in 1988? That's good.
Yeah, I remember that was a big deal. And I remembered all the. I remember feeling like a star for a little bit, because everybody was like, I think because you were with me at the booth,
right?
You and Bob, at least some of the time.
Yep.
And I would hear people, "Where's Taylor?
Who's Taylor? Which one's Taylor?
Which one's Taylor?"
And everyone's going, "I'm a subscriber."
Oh my god! Whatever. I mean, you can for your ego,
that's great.
Cool.
I mean, you make an impact
because people were were really, because I like to write and I take a little bit of effort in that, so it was really. Nice to hear people.
Well, do you think of a Zeppelin fan who can't get enough of them, like yourself, living somewhere and subscribing and every month getting this envelope, manila envelope in the mail, and it says Zoso. It's like, it's here, it's here. You rip this thing open, it's like, okay, read every single story, all the classifieds, everything about it. So you were a big impact on everyone's
thank
lives.
You.
So thank you.
You don't know, you don't realize, but you hope. I mean, I had that section, the Zoso profiles.
Right.
Where I had people. So I know people would send me stuff all the time of their own personal pictures and profiles and bios and things. So I know people were into it.
It meant a lot to people, yeah.
So, and I know it was going all over the world. I know I never stopped advertising in Rolling Stone. I never stopped, so I know, but you don't know how much, here and there I knew. But I mean, that convention kind of solidified it.
Right.
Because it was very gratifying to see people come up and being nervous to talk to you and kind of almost crying.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, it's just cool. I was just beautiful.
That was a lot of fun. Let's fast forward. What's your take on the Zeppelin world today or how they've handled their reunions, how they've handled their releases?
Yeah.
Do you want to take a breath and a prayer? I know you have a very opinion. What do you wish they
did
different?
Let's put it this way. Starting with Coda, I think everything has been fucked up post-Zeppelin.
Okay. Box set, 1990 box set.
All the graphics, all that stupid to me.
Yeah.
I mean, they had that celebration day, some theater looking, supposed to be Song Remains the Same. Yeah. All that, to me, was just bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it didn't transfer any Zeppelin magic to me. It was just... perfunctory, let's get it, do you make this look like Song Remains the Same somehow? Or, I mean, I liked the set. I thought there was some good stuff on the set. I mean, they had a lot of Earl's Court stuff from the acoustic, right?
Right, the Led Zeppelin DVD,
stuff, which was kind of piecemeal, but again, why don't you just release the
all of it,
whole fucking thing?
Right.
But, starting with Coda, like, what, here's their Coda.
Right.
I mean, Coda's a great name.
Yeah.
That was a great title.
Perfect, yep.
But why, it's like this gray thing and it wouldn't be besides a production, but, part of the Zeppelin thing was all the hypnosis.
Right.
Craziness. Yeah. And all the
mystique.
Creativity.
Yeah.
And then we get this gray kind of thing. And from there, to me, it was just continuing for whatever reason, whether because, and I won't cry this time, but because Paige was broken from right. that, and he didn't. And I've been through things like right, that where you don't right. want to do, when you don't want to be involved because you're so broken and you're depressed and your life's been changed. And I understand that. At the same time, I don't know what to say. You know, right. They should have had me, right. you know, or somebody, or somebody should have stepped up and said, you know, hey, we got to do something that's going to, when it goes to the record stores or whatever CD stores, right. it's going to knock people off. You know, even if it's Coda, if it's going to be the celebration day, you know, with this, I don't know, with the sunbeam and this.
Right, right.
You know, like, for example, Sammy Hagar did a version of
When the Levee Breaks.
Yeah. Incredible version. Right. I don't know the name, the black guitarist. I don't mm-hmm. know. Incredible.
Right.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he had this montage of this Zeppelin going across. It was beautiful.
Right.
The way, but it was the way it was done. Not that nobody's never used a Zeppelin before.
Right.
But it was done to where you went, like, you know, where your toes curled and you go, you saw the power of Zeppelin in the whole exchange. I didn't get any of that with Coda. I didn't right. get any of that with the little inane little Celebration Day
right.
ticky-tack crap right, that right. they did. It was all just, I wasn't impressed by it. And of course, we get into, you know, what's going on with Zeppelin history and with Zeppelin legacy.
Right.
And we, of course, that's another subject. I don't know, you know, because I was very vocal about that and still am.
Yeah.
And it still pisses me off. And it's still, I have a sore point about it that it was handled in that way. And that's sort of the way everything post Zeppelin for some reason
right.
was handled. And I don't really understand it. And I sort of, although I'll forgive Page because he was broken.
Right.
And maybe to a certain extent still is broken
right.
by it. The managers or the, Jones, although he was let, obviously, in some not in the picture a right. lot because of mischief. But Plant, other people, attorneys, creative people around the band, I'm not there. But something was not The ribbon was not tied. The bow was not cinched right. the way it should have been post Zeppelin on any okay. project, really, to me.
Very good. I always like to end it with this, kind of just one word answers and stuff. So I'll ask you this, and you could kind of tell me what you think. Favorite Zepp LP?
Physical Fee.
Favorite Zepp song?
10 Years Gone.
Are you a Jimmy Page or Robert Plant fan?
Jimmy Page.
Should they have continued after the O2 show?
Yes.
How about the first Zepp solo related concert you attended?
Probably Arms, right? Arms yeah. was before Plant, right?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, Arms. I went to Arms.
Your favorite live Zeppelin year?
Wow. God, that's tough, man. I mean, for me attending it, probably 77.
We covered the first bootleg you listened to. Well, I would say 947. Mm-hmm. Is that it? Correct?
Right.
Okay. What was the last bootleg you listened to?
Probably the, again, I'm just saying probably the Copenhagen, Second Night Copenhagen.
Yeah, I love that. Those are great shows.
Ones, yeah.
Last a Led Zeppelin song you listened to?
When the Levee Breaks.
Nice. Favorite solo project? no comment.
Favorite solo project was... Well, I'll tell you. I mean, again, I always yappy yappity yappity, but I like Plant at the beginning.
Yeah,
I like okay. his stuff. But I did. Like I said, the only thing I could say, I wasn't. You know, Page's solo. Meh. Plant even at some point. Meh.
Yeah.
Jones. Meh. But I do like. Was it Truth Explodes? Is that it?
Yeah.
finally, not that it's, you know, perfect or you want to hold it up as like, but it, to me, that's Zeppelin came back at that moment.
Did I ask you favorite Zepp song?
10 years Gone. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you did. I love that song. I thought it was Sick Again. Well, that's one of your favorites.
Yeah, you know,
last time I talked, you said Sick Again.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It's something off Physical Graffiti.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, I would say they're two kind of different songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sick Again. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. Sick Again and 10 Years Gone.
Yeah, okay. You'll do that to me more.
For the power of Zeppelin, it's always, I would say, I would always pull out Sick Again.
Is that your final answer?
And I'm sick now because I fucked up that.
So, Dave, dude, it's been an absolute pleasure. You and I told you this last time we talked too, because we haven't talked in about 30 years, and we met up last week or not last week, last time with we came up here, and you've been a huge mentor to me and just kind of inspired me in my Led Zeppelin journey. Just everything that you've done, I've seen everything you do with Social Magazine. So it's just like, yeah, you've been a huge influence on my life and my Zeppelin's journey. So thank you so much. And you have with everyone else who's read Zoso Magazine and comes across it on eBay. It means something to somebody. So thank you so much. Thanks for joining me. We could do a part two sometime. But other than that, any last words?
I hope we do a part two because I do have a lot of feelings about it, which some people may share and feel some kindred thoughts about it with me. But I just want to say... thank you. And I would also want to say, because I know Zoso at the end became kind of murky as far as delivery. People had paid subscriptions. And
right. You know, that's a tough part.
And it was it was around the time of that economic thing back in the, and I tried, and I still, every once in a while, I'll wake up, in like in a cold sweat, because I went through years of thinking out, I'm going to get out that last, and then the next one, and I'm going to get, and it's going to come back. And it never did. So I'm sorry that, people, if you're out there that, you paid and you never didn't get issues that you were, expecting, I'm sorry. And that's all I can say is I'm sorry. And thank you.
Thank you so much, Dave Taylor, for joining me for episode 13 of the Zep Fan Podcast, All Things Led Zeppelin. I don't have much else to say. Thanks again, Dave. That was amazing. Want everyone else to enjoy their day, enjoy their night. Crank out some Zeppelin, of course. Listen to your favorite song. Maybe something off Physical Graffiti. Do it for old Dave. I want everyone to have a good night. See you soon. Bye.